So I want to share a text I got with you. No, is it? Oh, I got several of those too. But the bus just keeps rolling on here because yes, keeps going in reverse too. It's Mikey. It's 3 a.m. I've been up for several hours. Now, to me, the humorous part is I'd been asleep for a couple hours, not even 2 hours at that point. And he said, I believe God has given me a message that I'm supposed to preach this morning. Well, I got that at 6-something this morning when I got up. I actually didn't see it right away. Texted him a little bit after 7. Asked a few questions, and it's what I would call a Holy Spirit audible. And so I want to invite Mike to come, and Mike's going to share this morning. And the message I was going to preach, probably hear it next week, unless Jesus comes back first.
Thank you, Paul. Something you don't know. Some of you know John Kohler. It's kind of cool. He's in Mongolia. I get up this morning and John's talking to me on the phone, or, you know, on Facebook Messenger or something, and we're talking about it. And he's like, well, tell Paul. I'm like, okay, well, tell him. See what he says. So it's interesting how things work out. But yes, I have my preaching pants on today, and it's kind of cool this way. Like, usually when Paul, like, I know Paul's going to be gone like in 4 weeks or something, and I have all this time to angst over what I'm going to say. You know, it's usually, it's really painful. You know, well, for weeks and weeks, I'm like, until it's over. Well, this morning it was great. I got out of bed at 3 o'clock. I went to the office and I sat down, and it's like, here it is, and went back to bed. It was just that quick. So I'm kind of thinking, you know, God's got this message that he wants me to deliver. So it's kind of cool. So let's start off first. Some of you yesterday in particular with the kids and things were asking about hope. Could we get the first slide? Look at that face. She's got a face, doesn't she? She's got her own Facebook page. She has a lot more likes than we have. And everybody, like, when they comment, it's the face, it's the face, it's the face. So it's kind of easy with her. And I was with Francis all week and with Hope all week, the missionary from Madagascar, and we went a lot of different places. And it's very cool going places with Hope, because we went out on a boat. Our neighbor works for Homeland Security, and he took us out on a police boat in the morning. We didn't see anybody, because Hope would have probably licked them, you know, instead of biting them. So that was good. And then we went to Navy Pier. So, I mean, there's like thousands of people at Navy Pier, and you're walking, and people just come up, hi, oh, how you doing, blah, 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 and everybody wants to pet the dog, how old's the dog, and so it's kind of cool, and you get to talk to, oh, what's the dog's name? I go, oh, it's Hope. I said, she has her own Bible verse, Psalm 62:5, yes, my soul, find rest in God, my hope comes from him. And if you look at different translations, they sometimes translate hope as salvation. My salvation comes from him. So I finally got to sit down. Susan and Francis were in some stores, and she was getting a little wild going in and out with so many people. I'm sitting on benches, and people just come up and talk to you, you know. You would go, nobody would talk to you, you know. People just walk with who they're with. And they come up to Hope, and this one lady with these two little girls, some sort of a Middle Eastern lady, I don't know exactly, and she had these two little girls. She was afraid of Hope, but the little kids weren't. And we started talking, and, oh, what's the dog? Oh, well, she'll go to hospitals, she'll go to nursing homes, things like that. And I said, well, she has her own Bible verse. And I says, do you ever read that? She said, oh, no, I never read. I said, well, look in the Bible. It's Psalm 62:5. You know, my hope is in the Lord. And she looks at me, I says, and what is your hope in? And the point being, everywhere we go, where's Donna? Are you out? Yeah, you're out there. We were with Donna a couple weeks ago, and we were at a restaurant, you know, and everybody's talking to Hope, you know. It's like, how you doing? They just come up. It's real easy. So it's just really easy with her. She's a good conversation starter. But she will be here next week. She goes to the Presbyterian Church today with the other family, you know. Woo. But you know what? She sleeps no matter who's preaching. She sleeps. So don't feel bad. She sleeps everywhere. Except last week, Francis and Susan and I were invited with Hope. Well, Hope comes with the package. But anyways, we went to this United Methodist Church in Bradley or Kankakee, and we've been there before. There's a connection with Mercy Ships. And we're there with Hope, and it's a bigger sanctuary, and we're sitting in the front row with the pastor, and Francis and Hope's there and everything. And I think they used to have an organ. Now they have an organ on CD, but it sounds really good. And so they start with the organ music, and Hope starts, and she starts singing, and it's like everybody's dying in the place, you know. Yeah, and Paul wants her to like raise her paw so she'd be Pentecostal, I guess, you know. So she starts singing in this thing, and it's like, you know, it's great. And the kids at Sunday school, we brought her through the classes, and she met the kids, and it's just kind of cool. And then we took her to a pastor's conference. Susan and I and Paul and Heidi were at this conference for a couple days with Dr. Chapman and stuff, and all of a sudden, now she sings everywhere we go, you know, right? Because we had a lot of worship, and she's... Then Susan took her to school on Thursday, and I guess is not part of the program, you know, for comfort dogs. So, but anyways, the point being is she's a good door opener. And then the other thing I tell you, seasoned citizens, we're going to the Billy Graham Museum. You got to remember, now I was with Francis like pretty much 18 hours a day. We went to two small groups. We were here for youth group. We went to the nursing home. I was at two funerals. I preached one of them, and I mean, we were together a lot, and maybe he kind of rubs off on you. So it was just kind of a wild week with him, and I think he's in Florida today. He's coming, flying through Chicago tomorrow, back to Paris, to Benin, to Madagascar. He'll be home probably by next Sunday, if the way his things are going. So let's pray for a minute. Lord, we come to you this day, and we thank you for this day that you've given us, and we thank you for yesterday, Lord, for this great time we had with Harvest Fest and the many people that came, and hopefully many people were touched and will be returning and seeking and looking, and we just thank you for all the many people who helped out, and we praise you today for this service and ask your blessing on it. Amen. So... Francis comes in on, I think, Thursday night. Friday, we got to go to a funeral. I'm not preaching it, but we're going to this funeral. So we go to the funeral, and no dog. But anyways, we're at the funeral, and so he gets his first look at an American funeral. Then I did a funeral about 14, 15 weeks ago of about, I think he was 28 years old, this young man who died of a medical problem. He had some sort of a heart thing. I knew the mother, and so she has five boys. So a little over a week ago, I did another funeral for another boy, 22 years old. Alcohol, drugs, we're not exactly sure what it is, but it was real weird because when I went on the computer and I wanted to see what I said about the brother back in July, I think it was, and oh yeah, I did the father's funeral too, exactly 4 years ago that date. Father committed suicide. So she's lost the husband, the one son, the husband to suicide, the one son to a medical, the other son to, you know, drugs and alcohol. When I did the son's, the father's funeral went 2 days. I did the closing. He was quite a guy, FBI agent, Navy pilot. Literally, I think thousands of people came through that place over 2 days. For the first son that passed away, there was like 300 people at this funeral home in Villa Park. And this one, I mean, I don't know, I think he lived in Madison, Wisconsin, so less people came. And we're at this funeral, and I'm looking out, there's like more people than are here, maybe 100 or so, and they're all young. I mean, they're all like, they're his friends, you know, 18, 19, 20. 21, 22, and I had talked to the mother on the phone. She lives out of state. She came in. I says, Lori, what do you want me to do? I says, you know, I says, can I just, she says, just tell it like it is. So I preached a message of hope. This young man, he was all about Led Zeppelin, Stairway to Heaven. Most of you know the song. He was looking for a stairway to heaven. She said he doesn't believe. And I preached that, and then she got up, and she preached it again. Where does your hope come from? You know, my hope comes from the Lord, because this type of stuff happens more than we probably want to realize. And yesterday. We had a great time. What was his name? Tim. Tim the illusionist. He's up here. I'm sitting in back, and I'm like, wow, this guy's pretty good. I saw him once years ago at Oak Brook, I think. And he's up here, and I'm like, wow, this guy's good. And I think, Marianne, you were sort of by me, and I'm like, and he ain't pulling no punches either. You know, he didn't, like, dumb it down or smooth it out. I mean, he preached it just like it was. You got sin, and, you know, Jesus comes to take or cover that for you. And I asked Paul afterwards, I says, Paul, did you talk to the guy? Did you, like, does he have, like, a secular version and a low version and a medium version and a high version? Paul said, I told him just to bring it on. And I think that's how it's meant to be. In Madagascar, that's how they do it. They bring it full on. So my point being, at the funeral, at Navy Pier, here, yesterday, we're all preaching the same message. It's all about the same thing. You know, it's about having a relationship with Jesus Christ. And that's what it's all about. But for, I got to tell you, I didn't become a believer. How old was I, Susan? 40-ish? 40-ish. You know, I was Jewish. I didn't believe in any of this stuff. I used to sit in the back. They'd come with communion, pass that by, you know, for 18 years in the Presbyterian church. So, anyways, same salvation message. But for somebody, maybe like the people across the street, I don't know, or maybe, I don't know these people that showed up. I don't know what they know. I don't know what their background was. Did they grow up in a church? Was it Presbyterian, Methodist, Pentecost? Who knows? Catholic, whatever it is. I don't know what their background is. Maybe it's nothing. When we were in Madagascar, or actually we were in Ecuador, they never even heard Jesus, you know? And I had this problem like, well, now I'm letting them in on the deal. Now they're kind of in trouble because if they don't accept, you know, but that's another sermon. So we'll get in. It's about Romans and stuff like that. But anyway, so I'm thinking, wow, if you don't know anything, and how many of you know the story of Noah's Ark? I mean, everybody knows Noah, right? You know, oh yeah, yeah, God told Noah to build an ark, and then he took the animals two by two. They got in the ark, it rained, and they were all saved. And so I was like thinking about that, and of course I Googled, I asked Siri this morning, I need, you know, where's Noah's Ark? And it's like, all the water parks pop up, you know? It's like, no, I mean, Noah's Ark, Bible, Siri. You know, Siri's kind of secular, I think. They've taught her that way. I said, I want to know about Noah. Well, when you know, everybody kind of knows that story. They took the animals, went in the ark. Did you see the ark or the, yeah, so, not the real one, but a replica of it? And I'm thinking about this, and I'm like, okay, that's a cool story. A lot of people know it. And it comes from Genesis 5:32. It says, after Noah was 500 years old. So if you don't know anything about Noah, let me tell you about Noah. When he was 500 years old. What? Nobody lives to be 500 years old. I don't, you know, you can't even go any further. I'm talking about a total non-believer, knows nothing. You're talking 500 years. I asked Siri this morning, who's the oldest person, you know, like, of course she doesn't say Noah or Methuselah or anything like that. She says some lady in Tibet or something that lived to be 126 years old. 500 years old. Oh, and by the way, when he was 500, he started building this ark in his backyard, and it took him, anybody know how long? About 100 years, roughly. And, oh, by the way, they didn't know what rain was. They never had rain. So now you're really, like, if you're talking to a non-believer, you're really having a problem. Well, he was 500 years old when he started. He built it for 100 years. It's going to rain. And then I'm thinking, oh, if you live down the street from Noah, kids, don't go by Noah's house because this guy is, you know, he's nuts. He's building this ark for rain. We don't know what he's talking about. So it's a hard message to get across. Then, you know, after 600, well, when he was 600 roughly, then the God flooded the earth. And I'm thinking, well, that's a really easy story. A lot of people know Noah's ark, but if you think about it, it doesn't make any sense, you know. I don't want to be 500 years old for sure. My knees, I'll have to replace everything. I'll be a new, everything will be done. So then I was thinking about it. That's Old Testament. That's Genesis, the first book. Then we move up to the New Testament where Jesus feeds the 5,000. And it says, when Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them, and he healed their sick. Next slide. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place, and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy some food," or buy, back up one, please, if you can, buy something for themselves. He didn't call Jimmy John's, you know, "I need 5,000 tuna sandwiches, bring them over right away." He know that the disciples are going, "Send them out so they can get some food because it's late." Next slide, please. Oh, as evening approached, the disciples came to him. No, I'm sorry. Next slide. Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. We'll order out. You give them something to eat." And they're like, but Jesus, we got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. That's all we got." They answered. Next slide. "Excuse me. Bring them here to me," he said. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks, and he broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. I think there's one more slide. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. Okay, so you got this total non-believer, 5 loaves of bread, 2 fish, 5,000 and... if you read most accounts in the Bible, it's 5,000 men plus women and children. There might have been 8 or 10,000 people there. So you tell this to, well, he fed, tell this to people. He fed 8,000 people with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, you know. They're not going to believe you too much. I mean, think about all these stories in the Bible. You know, Moses hits a rock and water comes out. I mean, this is science fiction some for some people if they don't know anything about it. So people will say, "Well, you're crazy. You know, I don't want to believe this. It's just a book. It's a good story." You know, it is. But if you think about it, it's fiction for most people because it makes no sense. So going back to Billy Graham, so we're at the Billy Graham Museum. And again, I've been there probably, this is maybe my 5th time. And we're walking through Billy Graham. There's nobody there. It's like 11 o'clock in the morning. And we're walking through, and Francis is with the pictures. You know, he's taking pictures of everything. And I'm listening. They have a lot of Billy Graham preaching. And they say that in one place in the museum, Billy Graham preached to over 100 million people live, you know, in stadiums. All, I forget how many countries, like 60 countries. You know, he traveled all over, and he preached. And I'm looking at the, they've got, like, some of his notes and, you know, his Bible and stuff. And you know what? He didn't have anything like super deluxe to say. He just said what was in the Bible, you know. It was like he just prayed before, and he would get up in front of these groups, and they had his notes, and you'll see him if you go with us on November 30th. This is what he did. He just preached it like it was. So you can preach it like it is too. But anyways... so if you're talking to somebody who knows nothing about this book and you start telling them these stories, they might push back. "Oh, yeah, he's 500 years old. Yeah, right, sure, okay." You know, they might push back on you right away. For some people, that works. Others have different ways. Hope has her own unique way, you know. How does that Chase? You ever see the Chase commercial? You know, little dogs. That's kind of how Hope is. She's like walking down Navy Pier, you know, and it's like... she's looking for who she's going to talk to. So she's kind of cool that way. She's wearing her little vest. So, but I find that for me, this is me, not everybody. Maybe you do it differently. I find my best way of relating to people about Jesus, the Bible, things like that, is by telling my story. Because you know what? When I tell this story, they can argue with me. When I tell my story... you can argue with me, but it's my story. And many of you have stories. Hopefully, many of you have many stories. And a lot of you know I go to the hospital. I used to go to the hospital a lot more, but I go to the hospital, and I've had myself 2 miraculous healings. I'll tell you about them if you want later. I've seen several miraculous healings. I've seen hundreds of people in the hospital healed, maybe not like that, but I've experienced that twice myself, and I've seen that in a couple people. And you can argue with me, but I'll tell you the real deal on it. So then I can tell you stories on the mission field. Susan and I went to Sudan once. Lord knows why we went there. I don't know. to Khartoum. We flew into Khartoum, and there's a story about we got stopped in the, not like the TSA here, George, I mean with machine guns, and it's like, we want to open that bag. And I'm like, oh gosh, I don't want you to open that one. And I got this big duffel bag, it's on a table, guy starts opening, and I'm like, in the name of Jesus, don't open that bag. And he just closed the bag and he says, go. I can tell you more about that, sir. I can tell, what's that? Well, I think Susan might argue with me, but we were carrying like the Jesus video and stuff, and you didn't want to like have to explain that. So explain it to me, Lucy. They don't want to know about that one. So so that was one thing. We were in Haiti, and is Carrie, no, she's not here. Okay, Carrie Bensfield. We had a thing with, maybe you remember, with you and Susan, and Penny was there, and I think older Wagner, the second youngest Wagner, I'll say. That's a good way. Ben, thank you. He doesn't fit in old, middle, or, you know, he's, but anyway, what's that? No, he's not a Joe, so, but he's a cool guy. And so we were all there, and we had this child that was dying. I mean, we had a doctor with us and a couple of nurses, and it's like, this kid is dying, and it's a miraculous story. If you want to hear it, I'll tell you later. I'm setting you up here. We were in the Amazon jungle once in Ecuador, the first trip I ever went on, and we broke down in the boat. And you know what? There's no, like, motor club out there or anything. You're on your own. And I laid hands on an outboard motor, and we got it running. Tell you more about that one. Some of you heard, and this is getting back to how important your story is. What was the best thing Francis said when he was here 2 weeks ago? Do you remember what he talked about? Because it was a big hit, I think, here. It was a big hit for the youth group on Tuesday night. It was a big hit at Kankakee about the voodoo. He was voodoo, you know, and then this pastor came and prayed, and then he was healed. And that's how he became a Christian. You know what? You can tell him about Noah and all that, and that's good. Nothing wrong with that. But you get Francis to tell the story about voodoo and how he was saved and found Jesus. Now he's got, I think, 9 brothers and sisters. They all know Jesus, his family. Incredible story. Can't argue with it. I'm not going to argue with him, you know. So some of you might have read, when we were on the ship, I had a few amazing stories, I think, but there was a story about a little girl named Sonia that with a tea set, and God, he just provided a tea set for me on the ship. There's no Walmart, there's no Toys R Us. This girl was dying. We went to her house. Can we pray for you? Yes. Can we do anything for you? She'd like a tea set. I'm like, there's no Walmart. What are we going to do, you know? And I remember, we walked back to the Land Rover afterwards, and my 2 translators and myself, and we were all pretty moved by this meeting in this little house with this girl that was dying. We got in the truck, we closed the doors, I put the key in, and I turned to him, and I says, when we get back to the ship, there'll be a tea set on my desk. And they looked at me like, whoa, you know. And I'm thinking, what did I say? You know, it's like, you know, Noah could build an ark when he was 500, but, you know, a tea set in Madagascar on a ship, you know? So we get back to the ship, which took maybe a half hour. We park, you have to go up, you got to scan in and everything. I told them, I says, you go down to the office. I'm going to go over. We come in on deck 5. I'm going to go down. I had like a sign-up book for people who were going out with me in the afternoon. I wanted to see how many people were signed up. I says, you guys go down and you, you know, get ready for this afternoon, whatever we need. And I'm just walking down the hall, and this lady, her name was Deanna Cash. I says, Deanna, you have a tea set I can have? She says, sure. I says, you know, I mean, like, it ain't coming back. I mean, it's like, and I mean, she had 3 little girls. I knew that, but she was the only person in the hallway. And I am telling you, we were on deck 5. She lived on deck 6, right? You could see her door from where we were because it was an open area. She came up, or she went up, she came down like in 30 seconds, and I've got this brown cardboard box with this tea set in it. So I'm like, okay, you know. So I walk back, and my office was on the 3rd deck. So I go downstairs, and My office was like long and narrow. Everything was small, and there was other people that had desks there. And the two of them were sitting, you know, Marina's Googling whatever, and on the computer, whatever they're doing. And they look at me like, Mike, there's no tea set here. You know, you said there was a tea set. And I like, here's the tea set, you know. You can't make that up. It's not in the book, but you can argue with me about it. But that's what happened. And you might think it's a coincidence. I call it a God incidence because that's what it was. So tell your personal story, because they can't fight you on it, because that's what happened. So I got other personal stories, but not to bore you too much with all of them. But so anyways, Paul was somewhere 2 weeks ago, and he asked me to fill in for him at Kathy King's house for a small group. And I'd never been there before, and Carol was there, and who else was there? Amber, you were there. Who else? Francis, me, Amber. I think that was about it. Carol, and I don't know. We're talking about 1 Thessalonians. I'm still working on pronouncing that. And I don't know what we were. I don't know how the conversation got where it was going. And I think Francis maybe shared about the voodoo, maybe. And then we were talking about, I think, the village in Madagascar we used to go to, and they had a big drinking problem, and the men used to get drunk and beat up the wife and kids, and then they came in with the gospel, and then I guess the guy in the village that was sort of like the chief distiller, you know, because it's all moonshine or Madagascar shine, whatever. He came over to Francis, I guess, one time. He says, you're hurting my business because, you know, 40% reduction in how much I'm selling now because of you and your, you know, you and your guy Jesus have come. And which is usually, if you read the book, a lot of times Jesus shows up, people get put out of business. So anyways, we're sitting there, and it's like, wow, this small group, this stuff is great, because here you don't really get to meet people, you know, and really talk to them. I mean, you meet them, but you don't get to hear their stories, and I'm getting to know more and more of your stories, you know, different things going on in your life. So we're at this small group, and then Carol Reitzma starts telling a story, and she's been very kind. She said she would come up and tell it for everybody. It's a personal story. She said it happened maybe 20 years ago when she was 8. So would you come up, Carol, and share with us? She's probably a little nervous, but that's okay. Okay, good.
All right. We were talking about how you live your life and love and prayer. And when we got on the discussion of alcohol, when I was young, my father was an alcoholic, and he was addicted to porn. He had a spot in his basement that none of us girls were allowed to go in. Reels and reels of pornography and walls of liquor. And my mom, being a very dedicated Southern Baptist, was in church every Sunday, was in Bible study every Wednesday, and never missed a Sunday. Every Sunday she'd tell my dad, guess you're not going to church with me today, are you? And he'd get a little upset and be like, no, I'm not going to church with you. And it was Christmas cantata she was singing, and every Sunday she would pray for my dad. She had no doubt in her mind that someday God was going to get a hold of him, and she wasn't going to give up on that. Christmas cantata, he was having a fit. He was mumbling and grumbling. He didn't want to go, but me, Tammy, Diane, and Rose are all getting dressed. Yeah, Mom, we'll go with you. He went that night. It was a Sunday night. Kicking and screaming about it. But whatever happened that moment in church changed his life. He accepted Jesus. He went home. He poured every ounce of alcohol he had down the sink and broke his bottles. And the porn, he didn't even put in the garbage because he was afraid somebody else might get it. So he ripped it to shreds and burnt it. And the next thing we know, growing up, our house, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, is open Bible study for anybody in the church that wants to come over, and missionaries that come in to visit staying with us. And then in 2005, my my father passed away of cancer. And that moment changed our family forever, at least me and my sisters. Whatever my dad did with his life, he touched so many people. And at the day he died, my husband and I had moved our bedroom and we had hospice set up, and he was sitting in our master bedroom, and all four of the girls and my mom, and I think Kathy was there. She's probably the only one of the nieces and nephew. I don't know what he saw, but he looked up and he smiled as big as a person could smile when he took his last breath. And I know without a doubt in my mind that God himself was in that room when my father took his last breath. And then at his funeral, he didn't want anybody to do a service or anything. He wanted people to celebrate his life. And many people got up and gave little mini testimonies about how he had touched their lives. But three people got saved from his funeral, at his funeral. And one of them was my sister's first boyfriend, and from high school, he was a long family friend. Never wanted to talk to my dad. He's that Bible thumper, you know. He was one that got saved at my dad's funeral, and I think it was close to 3 months, maybe sooner than that, I'm not sure, was killed in a motorcycle accident. So 20 years my dad worked on that kid. My dad dying to get the word across. And it was funny because it was storming, and when we walked out, lightning came down and Tony jumped back. He goes, "Oh Lord, I think Ed's trying to tell me something." He goes, "I better get my life straight here." And that's my story. We've seen miracle after miracle. We've seen and felt the presence of God, and I think we saw the face of God on my dad the day he took his last breath.
Anybody want to argue with her? That's what I mean, how powerful this type of story is. Because this stuff, I believe everything in this book. I truly do. But this happened a long time ago. But God is still working today. God is not dead. God is not a God of the past. God is working today in lives. He's working tomorrow in lives. He's working in Madagascar. He's working at the North Pole. He's working everywhere. And I always remember, and I don't remember too many sermons, sorry, Paul. But anyways, there was one sermon in Madagascar that we were going to ask for raises tomorrow. Probably not. So. And we were at a house church, and Francis preached, and there was maybe 30 people in the living room, and he was preaching, and he was from kind of Mark, I guess, and he was like, "You got to go. You got to create disciples, you got to baptize them, and you got to send them, you know, that's what you got to do. But we got to send them equipped, and the equipment is this, obviously, but you got to realize, you got to ask God, help me to discern, what is this person, where are they coming from, what is their background, what do they believe, you know, maybe I could tell the story of Carol's father to somebody, I don't know. But they can't argue with that, and this shows, you know, God, you know, I was asking about a song, "God is not dead, he's surely alive," I think it goes, and that's how it is. So that's my message. I hope you go out when you leave here and you share what God's doing in your life, because they can question you about it, you can talk about it, and you know the intimate details of it. You don't have to translate it from Greek or Hebrew or whatever from the book. You know exactly what's happened to you or your neighbor or your friend or your father, whoever it is that might have happened to. So that would be my encouragement today. I'm going to hand it over to Paul now, if he's willing.
Thanks, Mike. I want to invite the worship team to come on up. I think we heard a number of great stories. And Mike, you had some teasers in there. You'd start telling one story, and it's, so I got to ask you on some of those follow-up stories. Carol, thanks for sharing your heart. And no one can argue with your story. They really can't. And that's what God's called us to do, is to tell the story that he's telling through our lives. Let's take a moment and pray. This morning in Sunday school, Wayne talked about the first missionary, a Samaritan woman, the least of the least of the least, a woman that by cultural standards Jesus had no business talking to, and yet he revealed to her, I am the Messiah. And she returned to her village, and in her excitement got scores of people to come out and listen to Jesus. She has told her story of her encounter with Jesus. Lord, help us to see that there are so many opportunities for us to tell our stories. And a real simple thing you helped me with many, many years ago was just talk to people like they're believers. Just pretend they believe everything I'm saying, even though I know they don't. Father, use us in our generation. We ask it in your name. Let's stand and sing.